98.7, 98.3, RPP, the peninsula's biggest variety.
Made a couple of great plays in left field, and he may have just added his second home run of the game. Say goodbye to this one.
Reardon delivers. There's a fly ball, deep left center field. Wright looking up. He did it. He did it.
And that's sliced to left field, and it's another chance for Mitchell, and he makes a fair-handed catch.
In my entire life, I've never seen that happen.
Fernandez, left field, it's deep, it is, he's got it, a kid in his last game, homers to left. We told you to come out, we told you to watch this one tonight.
And welcome again to the ball game, and a lovely, it reminds you of the twin of baseball, doesn't it, the sort of week we're having and the sort of weekend we're going to have. And here's a man, look, we'll start, we'll reverse the order, sorry,
yeah,
Rob.
That's right.
Here's a man who's finally got his long pants back on, said he was working up in the Gold Coast, had his shorts on.
I was working, Neil. I was working very hard, sadly, although I did manage during the trade show to get to the phone a few times and check out some of the scores and see how the weekend was going. And by all accounts, it was a very successful championship.
It was. And we'll talk a little bit about that because Rob was down there. So that was obviously Phil Bertram, Rob Bowen.
G'day, Neil. G'day, yeah, Phil.
A good weekend, despite the result in terms of the Danny Long situation?
From a baseball point of view, yes, it was a good weekend. There was a lot of good games down there. There was some good baseball play. There was a privilege to see Travis Blackley work twice. It was also a privilege to see the young kids like Mitch Lay come up and I think he threw a complete game somewhere in the middle somewhere.
He threw a complete game in the second game on the Sunday.
Ringwood thoroughly deserved their number one ranking in the competition down there, and they lived up to it too. They well managed, they were well performed, they didn't give up very much at all in the pitching department.
Oh, and I think also from
hit very well.
Young Jordan Young had about 15 hits for the tournament. I mean, that's a fairly impressive weekend.
They were definitely the standout. So Geelong wasn't far behind them. There are only two losses for both the Ringwood, and they were pretty close too. So
the final was 2-0.
Oh, great pitchers duel, you know, and Josh Lee, terrific game because he pitched. In the semi-final to get them into the final and then saddled up again in the final and only gave up the two runs.
I saw Josh Lee, he sort of went straight from the semi-final game, went straight to the bullpen and just kept throwing.
So for the winter people who don't know much about Josh, what's he up to in summertime normally in the baseball?
He plays...
I would have thought he played for Geelong.
Yeah.
No, I think he was playing for Werribee.
Okay.
I'm not sure what he's done because he was down there with Charlesy because Charlesy was coaching the Saints side down in Geelong. Now that Charlesy's left, wherever, for all I know, that Josh could have gone back to the Geelong or maybe something like that, but I'm not too sure, to be honest.
But he's been a stalwart of that Geelong team during the Winter Championships for quite a few years now. We put him in the veteran category.
He'd be hard-pressed if the manager asked him to see if he can go 9 this week. Because I'll tell you what, I don't think there's much of his arm left.
And for Ringwood, Jordan Young, pretty much the only RBI of the final, but you said he just mashed the ball all week.
Yeah, well, in the one of the games on the Sunday afternoon, he had 4 hits. He had another couple of games where he had multiple hit games. So, I mean, he's a very, very good player. And I think one of the things we know, Rob, in these tournaments, if you are swinging a hot bat, you get lots of plate appearances, and it does the world are good for your confidence, and then you take that back into your club ball after the weekend.
What I do know is if one of your batters gets 3 hits in the first game, he's there for the rest of the tournament.
Oh, fair chance he's going to get to play a lot.
Because if he's seen the ball like that first game up, he's going to be seen like that at the end of the tournament too, so you just keep the hot bats going. Same with, if you find a fielder just plucking everything out of the ground, you just keep him there and just wait for somebody else to catch on.
I think one of the things with the way Ringwood performed was that their starters got them deep into games. Liam Devine had a complete game on the in the first game on the Saturday morning, and then Trav pitched in the second game. I think he gave the ball over to Jamie Young for the last inning. Then Adam Pajos and
I actually watched a bit of that game, and it was an interesting battle between two left-handers. Actually, the veteran in Travis, and I'll be honest with you, my son, he's only 23 and still learning his craft. The first two innings, nothing in it. Then in the third innings, they found the gaps, and that's all it was. In the first innings, we dead not scored a run. Bummy hit Trav for a triple, nice piece. But that's pretty much the only real hit he sort of gave up. But there's a lot of good shots to the field. And the difference was Ringwood found the gaps. Dandenong didn't find the gaps. So that when it sort of came down. So the score at the end was, I think it was 8-2 or something, or 5-2 or 6-2 or something.
8-2.
8-2. Yeah, so they just found a lot of gaps. And I think they scored 4 runs in that third innings.
So from the Dandenong perspective, they had a win over Mount Gambier, but they weren't that hot with the bat at all, really, either side, under 23 side.
They had a chance
especially
to win the second game against City.
Yep.
And we all sat down and watched that because the 23s only had the one game in the morning. Thank you very much, Baseball Victoria, for organising that. Too much drinking time after the first game.
Just what you needed, Rob.
I'm trying to work out why Buffett had a problem with that. Yeah. I suppose it was Sunday.
Well, he did say
it
thank
was
him.
Sunday.
Maybe he meant thank you.
But what lost that game was a coaching blunder. And I'll be honest with you, you go into the last innings 5-2 up or 5-3 up, your pitch is shot. You got 3-4 blokes, ready to go. It's the last game of the day. You only need one innings out of them. They keep the same pitcher in. And all of a sudden, he's throwing dick-eye balls and things just flat. One ball disappeared out of the park at a million miles an hour. And then a couple of blue pits. They were unlucky. They got down to two out. Just one of those blue pits fall into a glove. It's game over. But it was just a coaching blunder that cost them between third spot and fourth spot.
Hmm.
That was the difference. City got the chance to play the third spot.
Third, you get into the semi and you get a chance to have a crack at them.
That's right.
So
yeah,
they could have had a shot at it, but they didn't. So that was where their carnival sort of finished. The 23 carnival.
Yep.
But we went away with 14. 13 had never been to a carnival before. So that was a learning experience for them. And they weren't disgraced. All by 10 minutes each game. We competed very well. And in those 10 minutes, we'd cough up 2-3 runs and that'd be the ball game sort of thing.
So we spoke last week when we were previewing the tournament about Mount Gambier and how they'd had a terrific carnival previous year. And how did you see them, Rob, as a side?
I saw them once against the Dandenong, we'll call them the senior side. Their pitcher threw very hard but couldn't throw a strike. I think he threw about 4 walks in a row before they came. Now they brought some bloke in and he sort of shut them down a bit. Basically, once again, they just capitalised in the one inning, so I think they won 11-7 or 11-8 or something. They can compete. It depends on who's available for that weekend.
And how deep their pitching is got to be an issue, I would have thought. 8-2, they went down to City. Ringwood beat them 10-3.
They were missing one or two pitchers that played the year before.
Yeah, and in a tournament like this, their pitching is so critical. Yeah. And as we were saying before, I mean, Ringwood were able to get their starters deep into every game. In fact, there were... of the 5 games they played, there were 4 complete games.
Yeah, well, they did very well because, Blackley threw on the first day and he was able to throw that final on the last day. So, and been an experienced campaigner. He knew what he had to do to get his arm back up in other situations because he has thrown relief before in the top competition. So he knows that he could be called on, one day, 2 day, but probably not to throw 5, 6, 7 each time, but I think he threw maybe 4 or 5 on the Saturday, then...
No, he threw 6 on the Saturday, and then complete game. I'm not sure how many innings that final went, but the complete game in the final.
Josh would have gone at least 7,
you think, with a 2-0.
Josh threw at least 6.
Yeah, but so going on the fact that it was a 2-0 game in a 2-hour, you're going to get deep. Yeah,
who knows?
And just one of the other games on day 2 for Mount Gambier, seeing you mentioned him, they lost it in the first half hour against Geelong, 8 runs in the first dig, 7 in the second dig, and they pretty much lost interest by that point, and a lot of walks from their starting pitcher on that Sunday morning
that was
game.
That's what I was saying before. There was a lot of walks. Good velocity on the ball. The only problem is if you can't hit the zone.
Looking at the second division teams, was there anybody there who you thought had the ability, the talent, the roster to be a competitive team in Division 1?
Sunraysia won the final 7-6 over North East.
Sunraysia, once again, they were missing one or two of their frontline pitchers too. So it was hard to sort of gauge. North East had a couple of old campaigners that get the ball down pretty quick and they just hit the ball. It's like most countryside, they'll hit the ball. Doesn't matter what you throw, they hit. But Sunraysia would probably, I'd blank them with, or group them with Mount Gambier.
Mm-hmm.
They'd be competitive, but unless they've got their full squad of tuckers going away, they're going to struggle.
Yep.
You know, it was a bit like Dandenong this year. They didn't have a full complement of chuckers. They relied too much on two or three.
Yeah. So what we're saying is there's still a significant gulf between the two divisions.
Oh, yeah, look. The honest truth is, you know, Sunraysia might pinch one game. Mount Gambier had a chance to pinch a couple of games. So, but if they've got their full squads, they're going to be very, very competitive because they're well drilled, surprisingly, how well drilled they are and very knowledgeable about what they're doing. It's just when you're only going over two frontline chuckers and a couple of make-ups in the first division, you're going to struggle unless those two frontline stars have got rubber arms and they're built like Mick Wern and just keep going all carnival.
Mm.
But it doesn't happen.
No, that's an interesting observation. But they might also feel that they learned a fair bit from going to that too.
Oh look, I think credit to Mount Gambier for 2 years ago they won the second division, came into first division last year and did really, really well.
They surprised everybody last year.
Yeah, correct. And then had another go this year. And I think that's to be encouraged for them. There's not a lot of point, I think, in a tournament like that if they're a competitive Division 1 team, they're probably going to flog most of the teams in Division 2.
Actually, the honest truth is, there's a chance Ballarat's going to be back in the competition next year, because I was talking I was talking to the doyen of all news reporters down there.
Kingsley Collins,
who the man, not much gets past him.
And would have outperformed Baseball Victoria on the weekend.
That wouldn't be hard. In fact, I've got a funny story to tell you about Kingsley too, while we're doing this. But
can we put this one on? Put this one to air, can we, Rob?
Yeah, we can. Actually,
okay, right. Good.
It's actually
got the 7 second dump on.
It's quite real. But there's a chance that Ballarat won't be playing summer this year, and we'll be going back as a winter club.
Okay.
So all of a sudden, you know, there's going to be three Ballarat sides. Maybe we might see Ballarat back.
So they're not going to play in the Geelong League. They're going to revert back.
Play in the Geelong League because there's a league already established. And so, but then you've got Alfred and the Mounties. And then Ballarat City all playing out of that, you know, that magnificent complex up there.
Mm.
And now they'll probably start in B grade, but there's a chance we might see, you know, a bit like out of the Melbourne Winter League, you get the Ringwood.
Yep,
and the
yep, City. Gotcha.
You might see a Ballarat contingent go back into the
Carnival.
The Carnival, okay. Which would be very fantastic. So,
it's interesting they're not going to play summer.
Now, getting on to the story of that, it's just a two-part story. Speaking of Kingsley, he said they're just finding it too hard to try and get a team to play 27 games.
Hmm.
And
that's a fair thought. In third division,
they'd be too good. In second division, not good enough. And it's just very hard to try and keep all the players interested after they're getting flogged about, you know, 10 times out of the first 12 games sort of thing.
And I guess travel's a factor. I mean,
well, the teams go to Ballarat.
The
travel is big,
but they go away a lot. Twice
is the worst case scenario if you happen to get, you know, the first couple of rounds where you've got to go away. They're travelling every other week, so last year, you know, they were driving out to Berwick, Bomb Beach, you know, just places where you don't want to go.
The other side of town's very hard from Ballarat, as we know, trying to travel that way.
And there's very little sides actually near Ballarat.
Yes.
Actually playing second division. I think Werribee's probably the closest.
Mm, that's a good point.
To be honest, so.
But you're right, if they were to play, go back to Division 3...
It'd be no contest.
They'd be dominant.
Yeah.
Which is what happened for a couple of years when they first came back into the summer competition, and they had a couple of teams in Division 3. And I think the first year they didn't lose a game, but and won the premiership but weren't able to be promoted because they only had two teams.
Yeah.
I don't know what their junior situation was, but that's always a conundrum for clubs, isn't it?
They never had a problem getting the side up when it was at home, but getting a side on the road, they struggled with it.
Boys, we better have a break. After the break, we'll just point out Willow a bit flat out this week. We'll catch up with him next week. We might swap the order of that around to make sure we get it on.
Before we go to the break, the quick story about Kingsley Collins. Posted on the Australian Baseball Forum his usual diatribe about where Australian baseball is at. And
his views, yes.
Michael Crooks from the ABF, within 5 minutes of it being posted, is on the air saying, "Stop being so honest, Kingsley, you are correct, but we can't admit it."
Hang on. Let me just get my head around this. Michael works for the ABF, and he's saying, "Don't be so honest. We know
there are these issues.
We know you're right.
Fix it, then."
That's what I thought was.
I'm sorry to be
you're right.
To state the bleeding obvious, but.
But well done
for
Kingsley to saying it.
I thought it was rather funny that within 5 minutes and Kingsley finished typing his little thing, and I remember it was a fairly lengthy post. Crooks is on the phone to him saying, "Stop being so honest, you're absolutely correct," and that was the end of the conversation.
And sad reality is if they ask Kingsley for a solution, he would have one.
That's right.
And we might speak to Kingsley in the next couple of weeks. But we have a short break now, and after the break we'll talk DBA.
Time to chill out and enjoy racing at a different pace at this year's Relax Racing at the Mornington Racecourse and enjoy the very best of Peninsula racing. Kick back on the new summer lawn with a cool drink in hand. Book now, relax later at relaxracing.com.au, a proud station sponsor. Merrick's General Wine Store is country at its best on the Mornington Peninsula. Visit them to experience the fine cellar door wines of the Bailey and LG Park vineyards. Food, art and produce at this much-loved general store. A peninsular icon, a meeting place since the 1920s. Located at 3460 Frankston Flinders Road, the Merrick's General Wine Store is open 7 days a week from 8:30 to 5pm. See them online at mgwinestore.com.au, a station sponsor.
Hi folks, join me, Jock Blair, every Sunday afternoon, 2 to 4pm, for 2 hours of great blues music. Mojo Working on the home of the blues, Mornington Peninsula, RPFM 98.7 and 98.3.
And welcome back. Welcome back there. Interesting story there, Kingsley. So we will get him on in a little while. But let's start looking at DBA for the moment. In the third section of the show, we're going to have a great chat to Jack Lana, who's obviously great work with the Southern Mariners, and we'll have a bit of a talk to him. And he put a very interesting post up on Facebook during the week, so he never likes talking about his health issues, but they're still there. So we will chat with Jack, and then some interesting winter ball and summer pennant news we'll do in the last section. But let's start with A grade, and some of the ladders. We'll go with the interim one that we're using next week. We haven't quite got all of the fours and againsts accurate, but we've got the points accurate. Mornington have the bye this week, and that will enable them to move a little bit closer with those 2 points, and depending on the wins and losses, depends on how close they end up. But Barneo playing Berwick was set to be a cracker, fourth playing fifth, but then Berwick did have a very strong win the previous game.
Yeah,
might
so
be getting their act together, Rob.
It'll be fourth versus sixth coming up.
Yes.
Now, look, it depends on what Berwick trots out, to be honest, because you don't know what you're going to get.
They've been hot and cold, for sure.
You know, it's a bit like a packet of Cracker Jacks. You put your hand in and you don't know what you're going to grab. Barneo's just got to keep being honest with themselves. And you know, depending on, you know, they've virtually got to have all their personnel available, and they've, yeah, got to be hitting the ball, they've got to be fielding the ball, they've got to be pitching the ball.
Yeah, they're getting close to having Stu Matheson ready to pitch, who's going to be doing some pitching in the second half, which will help Ryan Sinclair a little bit there. If you've got two blokes who can do it, and a few other guys,
yeah.
Reece Selby's been thrown in the seconds, and he's just about ready to come up. So their pitching looks a little stronger than it's looked for a couple of years.
I think,
but still got to perform on the ground.
Yeah, I think I'd be leaning towards Berwick in that one.
Well, right. On paper, she's a cracker because you look at the runs for and against. They've both got 63 against, and Berwick just with three more runs for. Mm. So on form, there's not a lot. But between them, I guess it depends, does good Berwick or ordinary Berwick turn
exactly
up?
Right.
If good Berwick turns up,
they win.
And they take their chances, they probably win because they're a little bit more polished.
And at home.
But there's no guarantee good Berwick's going to turn up.
No, it depends on whether...
What we can say is that it increases the chance of rain over the weekend, because I reckon 6 years in a row Boney-O playing at Berwick has been raining. So there's a fair chance of some rain this weekend.
I'll tell you what, Neil, listening to the forecast coming down on the radio, when they said 12 and chance of plenty of showers, I was thinking, yeah, that'll
it
be
could
right.
happen. Yeah.
That'd be about
it
right.
It could happen. So look, we'd be thinking Berwick in this one, as long as they get their full squad and firing up, you'd imagine. The second game, Dandenong playing Chelt, and bit of pressure on Chelt. Only just got over Berwick, over Bond Beach the previous week, 5-3. Really haven't been a usual Chelt side, and haven't really hit the ball well all year yet.
Well, Dandenong sort of got their mojo back a little bit. They're really starting to put the hammer down and starting to really tear sides apart.
Beat Danny 7-0 in the previous game, looking good.
And Cheltenham's aside this year, they've got to be really, really good on their day. If they're you know, half a beat off, they're going to get beat.
Mm.
And in that one, I'm going to say Dandenong.
They should
not,
win that
not,
one.
Not comfortably, but...
It's at Cheltenham, but they should
Dandenong to get over it quite
well. Yeah, I think just on form, Dandenong for sure for me.
The next game is Chelsea playing Dingley. And one thing we can say about Chelsea is that they've been improving as the years progressed, as have Dingley, I think. Apart from that slip-up 7-0 against Daniel last week, they have played some really solid baseball.
Yeah, well, I think Dingley, you know, once again, they've put their faith in the youth. And you know, Jack seems to have the magic wand down there. He gets these kids, and they just turn them into kids with no fear. And that's the way they play baseball, whether they're winning or losing. They just keep having a crack at you, innings after innings after innings. They don't sort of, you know, lull for a couple of innings. They're at you all the time. But that little puppy dog nipping at your heels.
Yeah, but I think it's more important than that. I don't disagree with you, by the way, but Jack puts polish on them too.
Yeah.
But they're kids with talent, but he's putting a lot of polish on them. Mm. And I mean, that's why they had such a terrific second half last year that culminated in them almost pinching the grand final.
Yeah,
and I think they just get better and better, and I think they'll get better into the back half of the season, and I think they'll win this comfortably.
Especially at home.
I think, but Chelsea, you don't know that. But I can play five or six good innings and lose it in one. So it could be, you know, it might finish up a 5-2 win or a 6-2 win, but I'd be expecting somewhere around there, maybe 10-2, 10-3, somewhere around there, so Dingley to win.
Final game is Bond Beach against Frankston, which looks like top versus bottom. Bond Beach are playing a little bit better. They're certainly a bit better this year than last year.
Yeah,
but Frankston have been the hallmark so far this season. And full side, Rob, as far as we know?
As far as I know, all boys are back on deck. The pitching staff didn't do too much down there. I think Mitch only threw about three innings down there. I think Jeff may have thrown about three or four. That's about it, I think. So they were overtaxed. Bond Beach can be competitive on their day, but their days are few and far between, unfortunately. And I think Frankston, especially being back on their home patch, they've been on the road trip for the last 4 or 5 weeks. They haven't seen home yet, so it's a bit like an away game for them, but they'll reacquaint themselves pretty quickly and should retain top spot quite comfortably.
Yeah, I couldn't see Bond Beach beating Frankston.
We better have a bit of a look at B1 at this stage. And, of course, the big news that we mentioned last week Rob, is that the Berwick Emeralds have worked their way into the four, which is great to see in that grade. And
in fact, I think you'll find they've probably worked their way up a little bit higher than just being in the four.
I think you're right. They haven't updated the ladder fully yet, but on the results we heard, they might almost be sitting second or third.
There's been a revelation down there. It's interesting to have an all-female side down there playing, and I've been talking to a few of the boys. They're not taking them lightly either. They're not easing up on throwing the ball over the strike zone. They're still reeling them back. I think our boys have got him this week. And I know Scotty Bailey, he won't be holding back either. He'll be saying, yeah, here it comes, try and hit this.
What I find interesting about the Emerald side there is on their numbers, they've got the second best defence to Frankston in that division. So they've got a better defence than Dandenong, Pakenham, Upway, Dingley. So, which goes with what we know of some of those players. They're very, very tidy in the field. May not have the hitting power, but very, very tight in the field. And you've got to have a good day with a bat to beat them, I reckon.
Well, when you've got a side like that, that it's got decent pitching and a sound defence, that you're confident that that is only going to give up two, maybe three runs, it means that the pressure is taken off the offence and you're not needing somebody to hit one in the stands. And it means also from a coaching or managing perspective, you can play for those one run innings and just tack on and tack on and tack on, and all of a sudden You've scored in three or four innings, and you're pitching, your defence is holding the opposition. Yeah. It then starts to become a hill too big to climb late in the game. Mm. So that, I think, and you know, you can steal, you can bunt, you can hit and run because you're not four and five in the hole and needing that big frame. And on conversely, the teams playing against them then getting later into the game have to look for that big innings. So yeah, I think it's hats off to them the way that they've been playing.
Like I said, they've been a revelation to the DBA, you know, an all-female side. And, you know, they're probably playing in the right grade too. You know, probably playing, if they played in C grade, they'd be way too good.
Mm.
But they're probably playing the right grade where they can be competitive and also still win.
And probably making finals, the way things look. Dandenong are sitting in second position. And they play Dingley on exposed form. Dandenong should win that one because Dingley have struggled, just got the one win so far. And the final game's Upway playing Pakenham. And
you can toss a coin on that one.
Yeah. Pakenham are ahead and they've got an extra win or two, but this is an important game for them to
Pakenham haven't been playing well. Upway hasn't really flipped the switch yet like they did last year. Like I said, you can toss a coin on this one and someone's going to win and someone's going to lose, and I don't think at this stage it's going to affect the whole world too much.
No, I just want to quickly look at the women's game, because when we spoke last week, there was some doubt about whether they were playing, but they've got it all up now. It's at Melbourne Uni this weekend. So Bond Beach playing Berwick, Northbourne playing Essendon, Doncaster, and Melbourne Uni playing Mornington, all at Melbourne Uni on the Sunday.
Nice day.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you have Melbourne Uni, wait, drop in.
Is that at Ross Straw Field?
I think that's where Melbourne Uni
it says
plays.
It's Melbourne Uni grounds. Well, I think many years ago when I played against them, they play at Straw Field. They're on the main drag.
I think they play at Straw Field. And I've got to tell you, if it's wet and cold in Melbourne, it'll be freezing and bucketing at Straw Field.
It's a very open field.
Yeah, so good luck to the girls there. The other thing, Rob, you might be bit of this one in the mind, but the next lot of underage competitions are coming up soon, aren't they?
Yeah.
A couple of weeks' time. It's not this weekend, obviously, but
July sometime.
Yep, so a couple of weeks from now. So one of the things we want to do is to speak to one of the coaches. I know Benny Lokes, Lau.
Nah, we'll find somebody else to talk
about. We talk to him every year.
We've spoken often enough over the years.
Yeah. We've spoken to Jade's been on a few times and does a great job, but we definitely will catch up with some of those.
We'll catch up with somebody.
Some of those junior coaches. Look, what we might do, have a bit of a break. After the break, we're going to come back and we're going to...
What is that rubbish?
It's not the song I was going to play. I've got the...
Oh, dear me.
Been away for a week and look what
happened. I know. Terribly sorry.
No,
this is a bit better. Right, that's the one I meant to do. I don't know how that one happened. We'll be back after the break. We'll be talking to Jack Lana.
For their customer service excellence, and you really need to get in store and experience it for yourself. So drop in and see the Telstra Licensee of the Year team at the Telstra store in Mornington or Rosebud.
Or call us on 1300 My Telstra.
And in the meantime, I'm off to go kick the footy with Dad. Well done, Dad.
Thanks, son.
A station sponsor.
Here at Bendigo Community Bank branches, we support local footy,
local teams, and all our community champions.
Bendigo Bank and RPPFM, bringing local footy to the community.
Watch our live telecast on RPPFM. It's live and it's local.
The Red Hill Baker of Balnarring is your one-shop food destination. Jam-packed with a great variety of homemade artisan breads, gourmet pies and cakes, delicious salads and chef-prepared take-home meals. Our Provador has an amazing range of fresh, local and international gourmet products. Come in and enjoy a wood-fired pizza and lunchtime specials on Sunday while listening to live jazz. The Red Hill Baker of Balnarring is at the corner of Balnarring Road and Frankston Flinders Road, Balnarring, a proud station sponsor.
Hi, I'm Jack, and my dad is Pete from the Mornington and Rosebud Telstra stores. I just want to let you know, NBN is coming to the Mornington Peninsula, and all of our team are here to help.
Call us now on 1300-MY-TELSTRA. That's 1300-698-357.
Back to the ball game now, and Jack Lana, often in the studio, but on the phone tonight. How are you going, Jack?
Thank you. Hey, everyone, how are we going?
Yeah, g'day, Jack, going well.
We're all going very well now.
Fantastic.
Yeah, one of the things we're going to talk about, a few posts this week all about the great effort from the Southern Mariners, and you put something up yourself about how pleased you were with the kids. A huge year, and when you looked at the website, they were saying it's probably one of the strongest years for them in terms of how all the sides performed this year.
Yeah, for sure. Obviously, with the new charter with the Twins as well, across the board, Victoria has shown to be quite competitive, not only in the state title where we saw some close results, but obviously just summing up in the past week has been the Little League season, which started back here, May 20th was, I think, the Senior League, which is the one I coach, and then the Senior League went to Junior League, but in conjunction had the Intermediate League tournament going on as well, which then led into the Little League series that it just sort of wound up in the weekend just gone. So it's quite a big deal for not only Australia, but obviously Victoria, who now seem to be competing very strongly across the board.
Yeah, so all four teams made it to the Nationals.
Yep.
And they all finished within the top half of their age groups.
Yeah, exactly right. So with a lot of the seedings, obviously it depends with how many teams end up going. So I think at Little League we had 20 teams across the nation, and then at Senior League we had, 11. So it can vary, but when you do your grading games, you obviously get reseeded. If you're lucky enough to be in a pool and you get the right schedule, you have every chance to succeed, and just finishing up with the Little League because I was lucky enough to get asked to be an assistant. We finished second in our pool, which put us in the top 8 category. So then we had a chance to play off for gold, and we played 2 of the best games of baseball I've seen Little Leaguers play, and we were just on the wrong end of the result, but we ended up finishing 6th, which is again I think the Southern Mariners' best result at the league level. Mm.
Jack, what's the reason why there's the difference in numbers of teams? You sort of mentioned there 11 at the senior league and 20 at the little. What's the reason behind the sort of differential in the numbers?
Yeah, I suppose participation is probably a key one. Little League Australia is obviously the main push, and you can get more kids at a younger age. And I don't know, things get in the way, high school gets in the way, some sort of factors that way. But we've seen that predominantly across the strong charters that produce it in sort of a national level at the Little League are filtering through, and those same sort of kids are staying in the game, which I think is a credit to Baseball Australia with this pathway. You can see that they really want to stay and want to stay involved. So those charters, you know, growth, you don't see the growth immediately, but when the kids start at that Little League age group and have the ability to progress, you can see that they, you know, you can really see a strong charter, you know, evolve across all age groups. So it's good to see, I think, that this pathway, and then hopefully more charters stick around. But you can see that sometimes at senior league level, some of the charters have had to merge to make teams, and I don't know how other states run and stuff like that, but you definitely see the same sorts of people. I definitely have in the last 3 years, but they might be wearing a different hat, but they're in the same area. So things can sort of float and change, and it just depends how their systems run, I think.
Yeah, Jack, I've heard some rumblings coming out of Baseball Victoria or something around there. They're going to try and split the charters or create another charter down in the southeast. Is there any legs on that at all?
You're probably sort of hearing the same things year in, year out for the last couple of years, based on size. Obviously, the Southern Mariners is quite a big charter. I think there's 10 teams or 11 teams inside the charter, which is obviously quite big and can sometimes be unmanageable. But, you know, we've got some great people around us. And I think it was the fall of the Yarra Rangers, which actually helped us pick up teams like Berwick, Pakenham, Mulgrave into our charter. And then obviously St Kilda were looking for a new home. So our vast reach of the Mariners, probably not necessarily making a new charter, but still maybe some restructuring maybe needs to happen. But that's for the big guys to take care of. I don't know the ruling. I don't know where you draw the line. I don't know, you know, founding clubs that need to stay involved. I don't know the lines, you know, the restructuring, zoning, whatever needs to happen. But 10's a big number. And if you're looking for, not necessarily evenness, but if you're looking for sort of a 16 charter across four charters, I don't know the right answer. But at the minute, we're lucky enough to have a pool of 10 to choose from, or 11. And until things change, I'm not one to gossip, so I don't really know.
I just thought you might have heard something about the rumbling, because, you know, I'm sort of getting this from various people where they're sort of involved with that charter land, you might say.
Yeah, no, well, my focus is the kids, Wolf. So I try and make the whole charter better. I'm not all about trying to make one team better. I like the idea of working with a bunch of kids across different age groups and trying to make the collective better rather than having one sort of advanced team beating up on little kids. So I really enjoy that, and that's my focus. So anything that's sort of political that way, I'm not really. I might put my focus into training. So that's where I'm at, Wolf. So.
No, that's what I want to hear.
Yeah. So when you get your squad together, Jack, obviously the kids have got, they've played some baseball and they've got an amount of ability to get to where they are. What are some of the things that you're working on with the group of kids you get to make them better?
So I think I'll start, obviously, because I'm the head coach of the senior league team. So what I'm looking for at the senior league level, obviously, is can they play? Are they coachable in that team? So when we get the team, I think this year with the tournament moving to March, we had tryouts in January. So obviously not a lot of time to finesse and work things better. But what I really try and work on is teammanship and how their ability to sort of mould themselves into a team-type fitting, because I feel that the best teams win this. You can have the best player in the world, but he can only do one job on a day. So I really try and get a team focus, really try to instill some good mythology, but try and really instill some good philosophies and make sure we're playing the game the right way, because if you play the game the right way, it sort of looks after yourself, but you've got to have the right kids and the right mental attitude to, I guess, take them on board and take them to places they've really never been, because it is that sort of pathway where in previous years and previous where this thing wasn't available, if you weren't in the state program, you really didn't get a look in at sort of tournament baseball or high-quality nationals-type tournament baseball. So it is that extra pathway for those kids that probably previously weren't even getting a look in. So I really try and build team, and I find that team, in sort of a month or 2 months of training, you really try and gel. And then you just see where it takes you. And I've been fortunate enough to be able to get to the Nationals three times now. Obviously, got lucky this year with Geelong pulling out at the senior league level. So it gave us another opportunity because we did finish third. And we grasped that with both horns. And I think you could tell that we were a different side when we went away. We were competitive and we challenged. And we ended up finishing with a record of 6-1 with the same record as the champions.
Mm.
But because of reseeding and we missed out by runs against, we missed out by one run. So we missed the semi-finals.
Well,
so the highest we could finish was fifth, which is unfortunate, but to the boys' credit, which is what I try to instill in them, they could have turned up the last 2 days, rolled over, finished eighth and finished off pretty poorly. But the way I want them to play and the way I want them to play in the future, and that's just not just with the Mariners uniform, but any time they put on a uniform, I want them to succeed and challenge and never have a die attitude. So we came out the final 2 days and put two good results on and finished the tournament properly, so which is a full credit to
Absolutely.
Full credit to them.
How's the support of parents been? Because they've got a lot of driving around to do over that period of months, haven't they?
Yeah, they do. Well, training's a big part of it, and the games are the results. So the training is something that I pride myself on, and I try not to overload them because I'm a big believer, and I've had surgeries myself on the arms and stuff, so I try not to overload them. And do sort of specific trainings, and if they're starting to get tired, we sort of adjust and we don't do any throwing on that sort of day. So I am a firm believer that you do need the training, but you also need to be managing and mindful of overuse and that sort of thing. So we as coaching staff, and Matt Hardy and Nick Coy came on board towards the end, but you guys will be familiar with Matt. So we have a good understanding that, especially leading into winter months where they're training Thursday night with their club level or Wednesday night at juniors, that we wanted to do a Friday night hitting session, and then they went to their junior-senior events on the Saturday at the Clubland, and then we had a Sunday morning session, which was our primary session. So I wanted to keep that sort of tournament feel, because sometimes when you go away, you're playing four or five games in a row that you haven't played previously before, so your body does get banged up. So I wanted to get him in sort of a routine that sort of allowed that to be not overused, but just to have them on a field, getting used to going to the field every day. So I'm trying to think sort of outside the box with my learnings and trying to pass that on to sort of Matt Hardy and some of the other boys as well. But I do try to think and try to get the best ways out of it by sort of managing time a bit better rather than keeping them on the field for 8 hours and really burning them. So I'm quite conscious about that going forward. So yeah. The parents have been, so back to your question, the parents were fantastic.
Yeah.
They understand that it's a ride and a journey. And I'm very open with the parents too. I have good communication. I like to have parents meetings and be open and upfront and honest. Because I feel that's the only way to be. If I start hiding stuff, then that's not a coach I want to be seen as. So I really pride myself on what I provide, and I look forward to all the challenges that prevent. Some people can't make it, but things get in the way, timings, and I'm very open about that. That life has to come as well. So if people have to miss trainings, then they have to miss trainings, and that's part of birthdays and all that sort of stuff comes into it. So I'm very open as long as people are open and honest with me, and they're not just missing because. And they're telling me they're sick and they're going to a birthday party, I'd rather than just tell me, I've got a party on or I've got a family gathering, and then we can deal with that. I'd rather have that honest approach. So I put that on them as well from me. So
now, you've obviously a hectic time, the work you're doing at Dingley, the work with the Southern Mariners, juggling some health concerns and that sort of stuff. Have you learned a lot about yourself in the last 18 months, mate?
I have. I don't know how I keep going, if I'm honest. But the kids make you get up and go to the field every day, especially. And Dingley, I have a lot of great mates now, so they understand that the last 2 years of my health hasn't been crash hot, and they understand that if I do ask for help, I am in trouble. So it's just me. Sometimes I've got to learn to pull the reins on myself and really rely on the others. I'm not learning. I'm continuing to learn. It is a battle, not only physically but also mentally. The last 2 years have been, for lack of a better word, a bit of a hell to get up and down every day. But going to the field and it's not necessarily about. It's definitely not about winning or losing for me. I'm after development. I've had some really good results at tournaments, but at the end of the day, I want a better person. A better person out of that player, off the field more so than on the field. So if you take care of the stuff off the field, the on-field stuff sort of falls into place if they're doing the right things and all that sort of stuff. So for me, the learning that's gone on in the last 2 years, just about the person that I want to be and portray and really battle through is something that I want to be. I want to be a better person to them. I want to be battling. I want to be there for them. So it sounds kind of selfless, but sometimes I need to be selfish, and I'm still learning that caper as well. But it has been a battle for sure.
You're absolutely right, mate. There's no question that one of the great satisfactions of coaching young people is when you see them 3 or 4 or 5 years later, and not only have you seen them develop as baseballers, and you can give yourself a little pat on the back for the role that you played in that, but it's actually making them, turning them from young boys into good young men. And I think that's I know from my own personal experience with state junior teams, that's significantly more important than whether you win championships.
For sure. And I think that's one thing I've noticed, and it's definitely an ideology that needs to change, especially at Cobland. It's a battle, constant sort of thing to get through, I guess, the teams that we need to sort of combat, is that, you know, an under 12 or an under 14 flag isn't worth pitching a kid the whole year, which I guess opens up cans of worms, and, you know, coaches want to win, and I get that. But it's just one of those things that I think collectively, if we can start to work together and just worry about the development of the kids and enjoyment of the game rather than winning at all costs, I think the game will be in a healthy spot going forward. It's just that buy-in from everyone and understanding that, you know, flags aren't everything at junior level. You want the kid playing in 30 years. So.
You're exactly right, mate. I've had a philosophy for a very, very long time that if at the end of a season every kid has improved themselves, they understand more about the game, and they've had fun and they want to come back and play the next year, then that year has been a successful season, irrespective of whether you finish first, second or last.
Mm. Exactly right.
Jack, it's been great chatting with you. Well done with the Southern Mariners. Take a little bit of a breath, and no doubt you'll still be up with Dingley every week. It'd be good to see you. We'll catch up one of those Saturdays.
Yeah, sounds good. Thanks, guys, for having me.
Keep going, Jack.
All the best, Jack.
Thank you.
Yeah, great fellow, as we all know, and what a ripping bloke Jack is, and what a great job he's done, and we want to support him as much as we can, as of course people do.
A long way, to find a better person than Jack. Irrespective, I mean, his terrific baseball knowledge. Everyone forgets how good a player he was before he, you know, succumbed sadly to his terrible illness, but. Yeah. He is just a ripping bloke.
He keeps giving of himself, even though, you know, like you said, he could be selfish about it, but he's still giving out there what he wants.
Yep.
All right, let's have a short break, and we'll come back with a little bit of summer news and a little bit of winter baseball league in around 9. We'll be back soon. Keep on hiding. One fine day I'm gonna be the one to make you understand. Know that buying, selling or leasing a property is a major event in a person's life. Either you understand and have a team of people who are committed to making your real estate experience as stress-free as possible. Thinking of a career in real estate? Positions now available all over Melbourne. For more, call eView on 8781 3888 or online at eView.com.au. Expect extraordinary. eView, now you're at home, a station sponsor. And sponsoring Taking Care of Business every Friday from 11 a.m.
The Franks and RSL is one of the leading large hospitality clubs in Victoria and has a huge range of facilities for your enjoyment. Bistro, bars, function areas, gaming, keno, tab wagering and sports bet, welfare, cafe, entertainment. It also provides facilities for a range of sporting organisations and community groups. Visit and experience it yourself. The Franks and RSL at 183 Cranbourne Road in Frankston. For more, call 9783 2288, a station sponsor.
Ever thought of yourself as a powerful member of your local community? As a customer of a Bendigo Community Bank branch, that's exactly who you are. For when you choose to bank with the Bendigo Bank, it triggers a cycle of great outcomes for your local community. Banking with a community bank means your community shares in the bank's income. Your community then decides which projects that income is spent on. So let's make great things happen. Drop into your nearest Bendigo Community Bank branch or visit bendigobank.com.au. A proud station sponsor.
Running from my arms. One fine day, I'm gonna be the one to make you understand. one fine day. Wouldn't it be nice? Let's hope it's, we get one.
We've had a few fine
days.
We've had 3 or 4 weeks in a row where the weather couldn't have been better. So
a few challenges coming up over
we'll
the next
right.
few weeks.
Nothing's a problem.
We will be fine. Now, before we look at the winter in round 9, the Penn Committee for Summer has been announced.
Exactly.
What was the process there?
Well, from my understanding, firstly, Michael Goulet, who is a long time servant of Baseball Victoria and at the Baseball Victoria annual general meeting earlier this year, was actually awarded life membership of the league, and nobody more worthy of being bestowed that honour.
Actually, they're probably about 5 or 6 years too late for that, too.
Quite probably, but it doesn't matter. At least it's been recognised.
Yeah, that's right.
And, you go a long way to find a better bloke than Michael, and his baseball knowledge and his leadership abilities and capabilities were missed when he wasn't in a role, and now he has taken back over as the chairman of the Pennant Committee. The nominations were called for, and it was a wonderfully high quality group of people that nominated for
good field of candidates.
Absolutely,
say,
terrific
yeah.
field of candidates, and all of the people that nominated to or were nominated to be members of the Pennant Committee would have been worthy workers and members of that committee. In the finish, it was voted on by the clubs, and John King, long-time servant of the Fitzroy Baseball Club and a long-time servant of Baseball Victoria, as a player, as an umpire, and
good administrator, good.
Terrific. You know, he's one of the members of the Pennant Committee. Jake Sinclair, a young fellow that has decided to put his hand up and get involved, and I think it's probably a little bit refreshing to have some younger blood into the Pennant Committee, and a chap, look, I must apologise here, Dwayne Richardson, he's the current president of the Upway Baseball Club. I don't know a lot about his background, but obviously he's impressed enough people to have got enough votes to, get on ahead of the likes of Jason Blair and Terry Fitzgerald, Gavin Young, people like that who put their hand up. So every one of the people who put their hand up to be on this would have done a fine job, and I think it's a good step forward to get people from clubland back into this very important administrative and organisational role, all volunteers, and I think it is a very, and you know, as we all know, I'm not frightened to give Baseball Victoria a kicking, but I think that they should be congratulated on the taking the step to re-implement the Pennant Committee, and I think congratulations to the people involved. I think it's a very, very big step forward for summer baseball.
Their role, what sort of things will they get to look at?
Well, they're largely the
typical role. I mean, things change when, you know, all of a sudden they bring one back. Is it with the same powers they used to have?
That I don't know. I'd be only assuming, but from my understanding, it's a lot of the day-to-day policy setting for the summer competition is run by the Pennant Committee. They always used to be the tribunal as well. So, without real knowledge of whether it's been being changed.
Don't worry, me, the tribunals. I'm a pious saint. But I think it's the first step in about 20-odd years that they've actually taken this to actually get that conduit between the clubs and to the administrators, and it's about time they sort of finally did that.
I'm seeing a trend, DVA doing it, these guys doing it. I'm seeing a trend, not a damn good trend,
good trend,
and about time.
Yep,
well, you can't have people with no baseball knowledge or whatsoever trying to tell you how to play the game. At least now we've got a conduit to sort of talk to, or the clubs can approach to put their frustrations or their feelings in an area. They can sit down and discuss whether the merit has got merit or it's got no legs or whatever, and then they can pass it on to get it all changed up by Baseball Victoria. So at least now we've got that conduit, which is going to be well and truly overdue. It's just not the club sort of bickering amongst themselves, and then Baseball Victoria with no baseball knowledge, what's been going on? Oh, geez, what do you reckon we should do? Now, Nathan Holmes tried to get this happening, I think it's about five...
Oh, no, Nathan chaired the Pennant Committee... probably 4 or 5 years
ago,
and he did a wonderful job.
Yeah, no, I'm saying he was probably the last of the conduits, and all of a sudden that.
Well, the whole concept of the Pennant Committee was disbanded for whatever reason, and I don't know why.
Well, I read the review that was up, and I didn't notice anything particularly about that. So somehow in the review, or the results of the review, something like that disappeared, even though it wasn't particularly mentioned in the review. Strange.
But I think now they've got that conduit again, I think the clubs can have a bit more confidence in actually talking to somebody, because they're going to be talking to someone with a bit of knowledge. And then that knowledge, and then say, this is what we recommend you should be doing.
Yeah. I think it's a massive step in the right direction, and things like competition structures and all that. With these people driving that, those sort of agendas or ships, we're in good hands.
Yeah, that's it.
Right, now we've got round 9 coming up this weekend, and 2:40 on Saturday. It'll be the warmest part of the day, no doubt, Phil, and the top
the
game.
Coolest part of the day too.
And the coolest top game will be Forest Hill, who are on top, against GMBC, who just 1 point.
I think that ladder
out.
You've got.
Yeah, that one is wrong. I've adjusted the ladder. They are 1 point out. They're equal, fifth and sixth, with Heathmont. 1 point out of the four at the moment. So a crucial game for GMBC. And of course, at the moment, Forest Hill have battled hard to get themselves on top by a game. They don't want to lose this one and blow that lead.
No, and look, for GMBC's, or from GMBC's perspective, this is a really, really important game. I mean, this is the last of the first round.
Yes.
We've played half the season after this game. Now, if they drop this game and all of a sudden potentially could be sitting, you know, a game and a half out
halfway through.
Halfway through and again, with a very poor percentage, percentage under 500, it could be a tough back half of the season for them. But look, over the past few years, we've had very, very competitive, close games against them. We expect nothing different this week. I'm not sure what the pitching status is going to be, whether Trav'll start or whether he'll pitch out of the pen this week after his sort of heavy workload last weekend. I'm not sure.
Actually, I had a bit of a quiet chat with Trav in between the games, and he reckons, you know, he should be gone in a couple of weeks. So I dare say you'll be trying to get the most out of him.
And he wants to keep putting the work in, because he's basically, when he gets back to the States, it's game on. So he needs to be in shape when he gets there.
I don't think he's going to have a problem coming up this week. The way he sort of just manages his body and his workload, I think he'll be fine.
On the flip side of that, though, we recognising that he is going to be gone in a couple of weeks, we've got to start getting some work back into other players, because over the last few weeks he has pitched all but a couple of innings. So it's important for us going into the back half of the season that we get work. Bryce Taylor had a start in the seconds, the last game, the other game before the long weekend. We've got to start getting some innings back into him. We've got to get more innings into Mitch Lay. Parhos has been pitching a lot in the seconds. Yeah, he'll start seeing more action in the first.
Mitch Lay threw very, very well down in Geelong.
Yeah, so it might be a chance to actually start somebody different.
Yeah, I don't know. Adam will make that decision. But the big game is the Ringwood-Waverley game.
So let's talk about that one next. Ringwood at second, Waverley third. Percentages separate them because they're equal on points, a game behind top.
Significant percentage difference.
Yep.
Largely as a result of the runs for.
Yes.
I mean, there's a significant differential there.
Yep.
We've spoken about Ringwood's offence. They're not a side that is going to lose three or four long balls in a game, but they do everything in a very workmanlike, professional manner. And, they get runners on, they move them over, get guys in from third base. They're a very good side, and they support that on the back of pretty solid pitching with Riley Hodgson, Andrew Jones, and Luke Papanikolaou. They've got good solid pitching. Luke Cartwright does a good job back of the dish. So they're a pretty good side. Waverley doing certainly significantly better than I thought they would at this stage of the year. Again, very reliant on their pitching staff. Liam Evans, Jared Turner, who they've sort of had the luxury of being able to hold back a little bit. He's doing, and Jamie Papanikolaou has been doing a little bit of pitching for them in late relief. So this will be a pretty good game. I'm going to go for Ringwood, but I'm not going to be surprised if Waverley get over the top of them. Yeah. But I do think Ringwood will probably just have that little bit more offensive polish to score enough runs to keep
Playing down at Ringwood too to be a bit of an advantage for them too. So I think Ringwood at that one.
Heath might have slipped out of the four now, and they're just one game behind. Got to play Greensboro, at Greensboro, who haven't had the greatest of years in the winning games, but they've been in a lot of games.
Yeah, in a lot of games, and again, the problem for Greensboro is probably a little bit of depth. You know, their best three or four are very, very good players. Timmy Sullivan, Jason Blavis, Scott Moore, Liam Devine, and Hayden Godbold. I mean, that's a pretty good core of five, but yeah. The top five. But then they fall away a little bit after that. Heathmont, you can discount Heathmont if you want. I'm certainly not.
No, you wouldn't.
The game prior to the break, where we beat them 3-1, Trav pitched a complete game, gave up one unearned. But Wilson pitched well for them. And they didn't have Gibbons. They're a different side with Gibbons. I think this will be a crooked number, Heathmont's way.
Yeah. Now, just running got a minute to go, but Watsonia, we've been very competitive, played Ringwood and lost by a run, played Waverley and lost by a run. They're another team who can't quite win. They're up against...
Well, they've lost three by a run, and they've had a draw against Doncaster, which you call that a loss, unfortunately, the way the Dragons are going. And they've lost another one by two. So you flip some of those results around, and they're sitting up knocking on the door. Again...
Up against North Bourne, who have snuck into fourth spot.
It's a very important
game.
I actually think this game's got the upset potential of the round.
Yep.
I've got a feeling Watsonia are going to... are going to get this one done against North Bourne.
I think Watsonia's problem is they've just forgotten how to win it at this stage.
That's what it looks like.
Could lose by one run or two runs. You know, it's a side that's forgotten how to win.
Well, it's just a matter of taking chances somehow, isn't it? I mean, they've inflicted our only loss on us, and they played extremely well.
Hmm.
Jared Rogers hit a couple out that day, but they also had good solid performances throughout their side. I think they'll actually beat North Bourne.
Right. Look, we better go, guys. We'll be back again next week with more. We want to thank Jack.
Absolutely.
Remind everybody listening in, if some of your mates miss it, it'll be available as a podcast probably from tomorrow morning. So,
take your gumboots this week, boys.
Absolutely. Listen to the ball game.
To left field, and it's another chance for Mitchell, and he makes a barehanded catch!
In my entire life, I've never seen that happen.
Fernandez, left field, it's in!